For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We see you. You're a colleague. You're a partner. You're a friend. You're always here to support your family and your community. Now there's a school ready to support you. National University offers tuition discounts for military spouses and free tutoring, so you get the support you need to succeed. National University, supporting the whole you. We see you. You're a colleague. You're a partner. You're a friend. You're always here to support your family and your community. Now there's a school ready to support you. National University offers tuition discounts for military spouses and free tutoring, so you get the support you need to succeed. National University, supporting the whole you.
Hey, we got a show coming up with Harrison Greenbaum. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Trade Coffee. They're wonderful sponsors of this show. They do a great job keeping us going. I'm going to tell you a lot more about them during the show. Not a lot more. Won't be too long, but I'm going to tell you a little bit more about them. But in the meantime, you might not even have to hear that. Just go to drinktrade.com/pem. It's the best way to get your coffee, and I'm not kidding. drinktrade.com/pen. Whether you love coffee or just like it, it's the way to get it. Now, let's do the show.
This is Penn Sunday School, and to our listening ears, all angels sing and round us rings the music of the spheres.
This is Penn Sunday School.
Brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School, starring Penn Jillette. My name is Michael Lido, Penn, Matt, Freddie, Rich, and I are broadcasting from Show Creator Studios South here in Las Vegas. Penn's in Australia, so on today's show, we're running an episode of Harrison Greenbaum's podcast, Who Books That? Penn's a guest on the show. The show was recorded early 2020 at the beginning of the pandemic. Here he is preaching love, Harrison Greenbaum.
Hello, how are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I was sitting looking, waiting to come on here, and I've decided, took me a long time, but I decided I like your name.
Oh, thank you. You
know, Harrison Greenbaum is a good name.
I wanted to change it because I thought Greenbaum was too Jewy, and then my dad brought up my grandparents being in the Holocaust, and that kind of sealed the deal.
So they are not Jewish?
Oh, no, they are Jewish.
Oh, I see. I just thought that you
meant to. Can I just be Harrison Ross? And they said, oh, my God, your grandparents didn't survive the Holocaust for you to change your name.
I guess so. I was trying to just say that I understood is what I meant by my little joke. See, I thought maybe that their argument was, no, you're not Jewish. Your grandparents were in the Holocaust. See, that was the kind of thing I was doing there. And no, it fell upon deaf ears.
No, they kept telling me that Sarah Silverman, she uses her last name. That's very Jewish. And I told that to Sarah. And she said, call your parents right now. I will tell them how much work it costs me.
Yeah, I think it does. And also talk to John Stewart.
That's right. Exactly.
Talk to Jeffrey Ross.
100%. One of the things that I mentioned before I brought you on is you have such an incredible list of all the television movies. You've done so much, and it feels, how is it possible to do all of that within 24 hours a day?
Well, I'm wicked old. You know, I've been working with Teller for 45 years. And I did not start that at birth. So, I'm pretty good with time management. I also, you know, I try to get stuff done, and I enjoy getting things done. The term I think is precrastinator. Do you know that term?
Well, is it like the opposite of procrastinator?
Yeah. Precrastinators are people who do things before they're ready to do them. It's just as dangerous as procrastinating. So instead of putting stuff off, as soon as I get something assigned to me, I do it instantly. Do it half-assed, get it done, get it out the door. That's always my goal. Teller likes to do things right. So that combination of he wants to do things right and never get them done, and I want to just get them out the door, allows us to actually finish stuff that's sometimes tolerable.
That makes sense. I mean, Chris Rock said that he does all the other stuff, movies, television, because it makes people buy tickets to see him do stand up, and that's his love is the stand up. Do you feel that's the same thing? Getting them into your show.
I was going to do it less artistically and more in terms of commerce, but yes, all the other stuff we do sells tickets to the show, and that, I mean, not now, there is no show, but in terms of the overall career, that was it. As our manager, Glenn Ally, says, it's not anything, it's everything, you know, and we just do everything to get people into the theater. I used to think, if you want to get a little bit talking show business, I used to think that when I went on TV, I should do a little magic or a little juggling or have some sort of bit to do, and that way would sell our show. And it turns out that none of that matters. If you just show up on TV, that's most of the job. I remember after I did two tours of duty on Celebrity Apprentice, we were playing a casino somewhere, doesn't matter, but a non-Vegas casino. We stay in the casino. So you have more contact with the people that you're going to be performing for. And I walked out of the elevator and a guy yelled, "Hey, Penn, no idea what you do, but I got tickets for tonight." So that really meant that after all those years of, you know, doing as many Lettermans as anyone did, you know, doing Fallon, doing TV specials of our own, guy still, no idea what you do, but he bought the ticket. So, yeah, I agree completely with Chris Rock. I mean, it's not just, you know, the roar of the grease paint, the smell of the crowd, the actually being in the live theater environment, but it's also just that's where we have the most control. When you're doing TV, you know, there's a rule in the carny that you never play another man's game. And when you're doing radio or TV or movies, you are always playing another person's game, even if it's yours, you know, you still have other people involved. Whereas with the live show, without showing any disrespect to the people who work with us, who are tremendously helpful and creative and have incredible ideas, and the people that help us with bits and work us through things, with all due respect to them, and I don't mean that the way people usually mean it, which is with no respect, but with actual respect to them, Teller and I have a huge amount of power in the live show. You know, we're Penn and Teller working at the Penn and Teller Theater, doing a show written by Penn and Teller, produced by Penn and Teller, directed by Penn and Teller, and starring Penn and Teller. So in that particular small pond, we are very, very big fish. And I assume for Chris Rock, that's also true. Even when he did his own movies and stuff, when he's up there with the mic, he has pretty much complete control.
Yeah, I mean, I have a photo of one of the earlier television appearances. This is Sammy Davis Jr.
No, Father Earl Hines.
Oh, Father Earl. Oh, well, that's okay. Well, that's
Father Earl Hines. I want to catch you before you're seeing
your scene. I'm pushing myself too deep.
Everyone who's not, well, actually, Sammy Davis Jr. would be Jewish, but everyone not of my complexion looks the same to me. And that's Father Earl Hines, a fabulous jazz piano player who lived to be like 100 and still playing jazz. And there's Teller in a silly hat. And there's Mike Douglas, who I don't think anybody your age would remember, but did a afternoon chat show out of Philadelphia. And there's me wearing a very attractive Hawaiian shirt.
And was this still like the San Francisco days, or is this already moving up back to New York?
This may have been actually pre-San Francisco days. Wow. I think we had only played Philadelphia at that point, and Mike Douglas was out of Philadelphia. So here we are playing a local Philadelphia show that was, you know, broadcast nationally.
Oh, that's amazing. One of the things that I found, I was reading an old article from 1989 in The New Yorker, and Calvin Trillin wrote this about you guys. He said, "But what attracted me was the general agreement that Penn and Teller were terribly funny. In my experience, a funny magician is so rare that an innovative entrepreneur might be able to attract a crowd simply by announcing that he had one on the premises. In a way that roadside zoos next to filling stations along Route 66 used to put out signs saying, 'See albino raccoon.'" that statement feels still, over 40 years later, still feels kind of true. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, both of those forms are kind of difficult. John Lennon, you know, said that the thing he was most afraid of was stand-up comedy. He thought it was easy to go out there with a guitar and songs. It was hard to go out there alone in a mic. And, you know, stand-up comedy is the way it is now, kind of a real pure American form, kind of created by Lenny Bruce and a bunch of others, of course, but that form, and that's really hard. And also magic is this very odd art form, because all you have to do is do the trick and make it work, and you have attention. So you pop in very quickly. You know, once you learn to do a trick, you can do a trick and people will watch that. So you pop to that level really quickly, and then any rise above that is incredibly difficult, which is why you have such a tremendous number of magicians who work but just aren't good or aren't exciting or aren't different. And you put those two things together, trying to do magic and comedy, I think it's a really difficult thing. You know, Teller and I never set out to do stand-up, you know. We never played very many comedy clubs. You know, we were more carny and fair and that kind of stuff. And I always felt that people were laughing at us and not with us. Comedians tend to bring people in. Did you ever notice, you know, is it just me or, and I have always enjoyed that a little less than the freak show kind of thing. The way I break it down is Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan. You know, Bruce Springsteen, you might compare those two, and Bruce would certainly want you to compare those two. But for my little taxonomy, they're very, very different, because Bruce Springsteen is, whoa, don't we all love cars? Aren't we all having problems with money? You know, summed up by his line, there's something about a pretty girl on a hot summer night that gets this boy excited. Yeah, Bruce, you're kind of a nut. You know, we don't know what that is. Whereas Dylan has that freak show element. He never claims to be sharing things with his audience. He never claims this is something we all feel. You know, even if he's talking about something universal, he does it from a freak point of view. You know, as someone said very, very intelligently, I thought, we don't go to see Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan comes to see us. Traveling around. So when Teller and I would work, we tried so much to avoid anything that said we're just like you, and more just tried to state what was in our minds, what we were feeling, what we thought was beautiful. And if the audience chose to laugh at us, so be it. And if the audience chose to be on board with us and feel the same things we were feeling, well, also so be it. Kind of wasn't our job. You know, Allen Ginsberg, I'm a big beat poetry fan, and Allen Ginsberg said, you know, the poet's job is to stand naked on stage. And Teller often said that we do magic tricks to give people an excuse to stare at us. And one of the huge ideas behind Penn and Teller was, could a partnership exist without compromise? Could you work together without compromising, so that you didn't get the feeling that we were working together to water each other down, but rather to push each other forward? So my feeling is, to do traditional American stand-up coupled with magic tricks is very difficult, because the point of view is, here's what we all share, and then here's what I can do that you can't. And those two things, they both tie into kind of dull macho points of view, are at odds with one another. They are at odds with one another. So we never tried to do that. We are letting people laugh at us. We are doing funny things and we're doing magic, but never trying to bring American stand-up comedy into that, even though I'm a huge fan of Lenny Bruce. And I think that, you know, everything starts emotionally with me, with Lenny Bruce. I think that's too hard.
I feel you. I've been trying to do that. And it's very, very difficult. I think it's interesting because when I was starting to do stand up in college, Mike Birbiglia came to campus and it was a small group of us. And he said, stand up should feel like ripping scabs off. That's how much they should see of you, is that it should almost be awkward for your parents to see it. Like it should be that level of personal. Do you think that's something that distinguishes you guys from a lot of the other magicians, is that they are seeing sort of actually who you are? We know what your opinions are.
I always tell people when they, you know, when they ask me after the show for advice, my first piece of advice is don't take advice. You know, I think that you have to try to get your heart out there. And that can often be bad advice, because you also, while that becomes the high level you're shooting for, you also have to learn the chops. And I think some people, you know, they'll listen to Coltrane and say he was playing from his heart. You know what I mean? He was an innovator. He was playing from his heart. That was Train. You know, he was doing all this stuff. He was improvising. And they forget that before he was improvising, he was playing scales and practicing so much, he fucked up his teeth. You know, Sonny Rollins was sitting under a bridge all night playing the sax. So there was a band in Jersey, a line that said, you got to work to play. Using the double meaning of the musical term to play, but you have to get that low level chops. You know, I think you know very well how important Johnny Thompson was to us.
Yeah,
Johnny was everything to us, and one of the things that made Johnny so useful, and this will sound like a backhanded compliment, but it's not backhanded at all. It's absolutely a pure compliment. Teller and I can argue about angels dancing on the head of a pin. We can put a sharper point on anything than each other. And we can out-pretentious each other to a level that you could not believe. Teller and I can sit and talk about the finer points of one of our bits and how it compares to Shakespeare and Bob Dylan and traditional Greek tragedy. And we can lay out our hearts and we can stand there naked. And while we're working on all that, Johnny would sit there and say, yeah, guys, maybe you need the trick to work and put in a few jokes.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe you should work on the palming. That's all.
Because over here, it's just an educational angle. So work on that a little bit. Make the trick work. And then, Penn, say something funny. You've been speaking from your heart. It's really, really good. Let's put a goddamn joke in there. Yeah. And Johnny would just pull us down to earth. So you can give the advice all you want. And I think that there's often a shift in level. You know, someone asks you what's important, and you're very apt to tell them what's important is what you're working on now. And you might forget that what's important is very different for a 20-year-old. I mean, when I was 16 to 21, I practiced 8 hours a day, you know. All I did was practice. And I used to read aloud to try to lose my stupid Western Massachusetts accent. And
I think I have a picture of you actually in your 20s.
Yeah.
That's the Renaissance days.
There's a guy doing Renaissance festivals. I practiced all the time. And a lot of it, and I think this is something that we often forget, a lot of it useless practice. Yeah. A lot of it practice that I would never use and didn't get me anywhere. Learning how to do everything left-handed after I learned it right-handed. No money you're going to make from that. But there's something about having a level of skill. And it's one of the things that's so terrifying, I think, for comedians, is that the skills are so tangible and so real and require such practice, but are so hard to label that it makes it a little bit more difficult. Also, you know, there's all these stereotypes about different jobs. And you certainly know the kind of person that's a juggler and the kind of person that's a magician. And you know they're very different breeds of cat. Right. And Michael Goudeau, who, you know, works with me on my podcast, Sunday School, and who's also a juggler, said, you know, the difference is, every juggler knows how good they are.
That's right.
And magicians, what are they going to say? I'm really magic? You know, there's no, and comedians don't have that either. But it's wonderful to walk in a room of 50 jugglers and say, here's where I am. You know,
yeah.
I pass 80.
They're like strippers, and then everybody watches them and says they can do it until they get on stage and make their parents cry.
Exactly. But, you know, I can pass 8 clubs. I can't do that trick. I can do that trick. I can't do that trick. And I think that one of the advantages I had was when I first got interested in magic, which was very late. Everybody else starts young. I really didn't seriously start thinking about magic until I met Teller. I mean, I was 18. I already had a lot of experience with practicing from being a juggler. So I already knew how important that was. And of course, when I took up seriously upright bass, I was 45, and I already knew how important it was to just practice. So it's very hard to talk about comedy magic because you want to say, well, first of all, learn all this stuff that's really hard and boring and learn to love learning that. And then learn all this stuff that you can't label but also requires skill. And then throw all that away and speak from your heart. And that's a very difficult recipe to follow. You know, you watch someone like Gilbert Gottfried, someone who is so distinct and so original and so brave and is absolutely Picasso and Miles Davis, you know. And then as an experiment, just give Gilbert a dumb joke. Just give him something that the Hollywood Squares wrote for him. Give him something that was on Leno that they just hand to him and say, do this. And he is perfect. You know, all those skills that are separate from being Gilbert Gottfried are done absolutely perfectly. And, you know, you also find that, I know you won that prestigious Andy Kaufman Award. And Andy Kaufman may be the one we want to bring up most for being brave and original and not backing down and creating a whole new form that we called comedy just because you didn't know what else to call it.
Right.
And even that pure of an example, he had chops like you would not believe. I mean, right down to his Elvis impersonation being spot on.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And he was the first. I mean, I think we look at all these Elvis impersonators since then and people don't realize how out of the box it was to do that impression and then break it down with the foreign man character.
And break it down with that. And also, Andy was so scrupulous that he, in his, I don't know if you know this, but in his Elvis impersonation, he would not say anything that Elvis hadn't said on record. So, you know, I can't stop my leg, something wrong with my lip. All that stuff he was doing was from Elvis bootlegs.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And it's that kind of carefulness that that you can be. It's so easy to preach that speak from your heart thing and leave people kind of hanging because, you know, after you can play, rhythm changes at a really fast tempo in every key backwards. Then you start doing crazy improvisation. Then you throw it out the window and be able to do it. And watching Gilbert, you know, I first saw Gilbert. Gilbert and I are the same age. And I first got to New York, hitchhiked to New York, got to Manhattan. And when I was just 18, I saw Gilbert, just 18, on stage at the Comedy Store, just banging it out and grinding it out and just doing that, you know? So every magician will tell you the most important thing is to just be on stage and do it. And when you're not on stage, just to practice all the time.
We see you. You're a colleague. You're a partner. You're a friend. You're always here to support your family and your community. Now there's a school ready to support you.
National University offers tuition discounts for military spouses and free tutoring, so you get the support you need to succeed. National University, supporting the whole you.
Let's talk a little bit about MasterClass, shall we? With MasterClass, you can learn from the world's best minds, that includes me, anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. You can learn how to do magic from Penn and Teller. Now, you can do a lot of other stuff. You can learn cooking, you can learn writing, you can learn directing, you can learn to be an astronaut, you can learn to play basketball. I've watched all of these, and they're really, really good. But the most important one, of course, is Penn and Teller Teaching Magic. Now, when you get Penn and Teller Teaching Magic, you also get all the other ones too. Once you open that whole treasure chest, you get all the stuff. It's really, really good. You know, when we did the magic one, and a lot of people who come to our shows have taken the master class, and they write to me about it and talk to me about it, and they really, really dig it. And a lot of them started with Penn and Teller doing our magic one and then spread out to learn all this other stuff. And when I was checking out if we wanted to do it, I went and checked a lot of other stuff I didn't even want to do, you know, but just to see how they put it together. And master class teaches it so well and also ekes out other information that's more applicable to your life. I watched the astronaut one and the basketball one and still felt that I learned a whole lot, even though I'm not a basketball playing astronaut, contrary to what you read on the web. I highly recommend that you check it out. You get access to every master class, and as a PSS listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/pen. That's masterclass.com/pen for 15% off MasterClass. Now, I've been working like a nut, but I think that Reddy Rich has watched a few of these. Maybe he'll tell you about them right now. Maybe he won't. But either way, you can learn cooking and writing. I mean, it's real people. It's like Steve Martin and Neil Gaiman, you know, and like real cooks whose names I can't think of right now. And they do a beautiful job. They're shot like movies, and the people that teach it and lay it out really learn everything and then teach us how to teach. It was really, really good. Check it out. Masterclass.com/pen. Okay, let's talk a little bit about trade coffee. You see, now I'm in Australia and I'm not getting my trade coffee, but I cannot wait to get home. I go to coffee places here in Australia and they're fine. But when I make my coffee at home from trade coffee, it's really, really good. And I never was particularly a coffee snob, but trade coffee is turning me into one. They had me fill out this form, this survey, it's really easy, about what I like in coffee. And I like decaf, you know, so they have that too. And then they go around and they find the best tasting coffee by going all around to these, you know, individual trade roasters. And it's all stuff that'll make you feel good, you know. It's all these small coffee roasters that do these single source things. It's all sustainable. It's all really, really good. It's expert tasted coffee. Trade's coffee team actually tastes thousands of coffees and keep 450 different kinds live and ready to ship every day. There's no one perfect coffee, but there's a perfect coffee for you, and Trade's human-powered algorithms will find it. Trade's first match guarantee. Trade is so confident that they'll match you right the first time that if they don't, they'll take your feedback and an actual coffee expert will work with you to send a brand new bag for free. Trade Coffee sends you freshly roasted beans from 60 of the country's best craft roasters, small businesses who pay farmers fair prices to sustainably source the greatest beans from around the world. It's really, really good. I'm really loving these guys. Right now, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order plus free shipping when you go to drinktrade.com/pen. That's more than 40 cups of coffee for free. Get started by taking their quiz at drinktrade.com/pen and let Trade find you a coffee that you will love. That's drinktrade.com/pen for $30 off. I'm telling you, you're going to dig it. Hey, don't forget, I wrote this book called Random. It's going to be out in the fall to regular people. But to y'all, you can get it earlier, a signed hardcover book, plus this other book, a chapbook, it's called, of 4 short stories that aren't published anywhere else that are coming out ahead of time, autographed, all this stuff, plus dice, because the idea of Random is dice. And to the Patreon people of Penn Sunday School, we're giving a special discount that's more than it costs you to join Patreon. So join Patreon to support us here at Penn Sunday School, and also gives you a good deal on the book I wrote, Random, which I think is pretty good. And people are tugging on my coat about making this into a TV show. You can get on the ground floor of Random. I think it's really good. Now back to Harrison Greenbaum.
Yeah, and I remember talking to Michael Kaufman, Andy's brother, about Andy. And one of the things that I found incredible was that there was only one of all the television appearances he did, the Dinah Shore Show was the only time he didn't tell somebody in advance what he was going to do. So even though it looked like everything was spontaneous, or he put water on somebody, if you put water on somebody, that person either knew or somebody else knew and had approved it. And so every bit was very well structured and planned. And it only had the appearance of that, I'm crazy and anything can happen.
Yeah, well, I think in order to get that kind of chaos, you have to be incredibly tight ass. The real kind of chaos doesn't look like chaos any more than if you. I remember this is I'm not going to use any names on this because it's kind of a creepy story. But I had a very good friend. She was a hardcore punk, real hardcore punk. You know, the no wave scene in New York, late 70s, 80s. And she shot a video with another hardcore punk beating the shit out of her in a very, very aggressive, scene with her punk music behind it. And then real physical damage, not permanent, but more than you'd want to be hurt in any situation. And she sent me the video and showed it to me and said to me, this is all real. This is all absolutely real. And I said, wow, next time you want to get beat up, ask me and tell her to do it, and you will stay beat up, because this looks like nothing, because it's real. And what you have to do in art is you've got to pump up that reality. And it's as you point out, it's very counterintuitive that the people who are going on Letterman and doing a pile driver and doing this chaos stuff are the people that really plan it out. I mean, thousands and thousands of cockroaches on David Letterman. And David Letterman gets entire credit for that. The story behind that is pretty remarkable about Letterman. We went on Letterman and, you're told to never touch his face and never invade his space. He was very, very uptight. And we went on, and the first thing we did was a bit we did, which was a card stab that went wrong, and my hand got stabbed and comes up, and the selected card is on my hand, and there's blood all over. And when I bring my hand up, I brought it up, not intentionally. I brought it up unintentionally, a little bit too much to my left, and the blood hit Letterman in the face. Fortunately for us, Letterman came to us afterwards and said, I come off as an asshole a lot on TV, and I need people to beat me up. And I want you to come on next time and be as rough with me as you can. I don't want to know what you're going to do, but I promise you, the rougher you can be, the happier I'll be. So we were given that directive, and Teller and I went back to our meeting space, and Teller said, well, we could dump thousands of cockroaches on him. And we said, yeah, that'd be pretty intense. Then it turns out, here's the work part. We had to go to the Museum of Natural History and talk to entomologists. And neither one of us was fond of cockroaches. We had to learn to have them hidden all over our body. We had to learn what cockroaches couldn't hold on to. Because if you fill a hat with cockroaches and turn it over, nothing can, because they all hold on to one another on the sides. So we had to find this kind of styrofoam thing that they couldn't get holders into. We also found out that American cockroaches move too quickly for television. So we needed South American cockroaches, but they don't have color. So we needed Madagascar hissing roaches for a size and a color. And we had to use like 8 different species and different amounts of that. And we had to learn to take care of them and put them in the hat. And we had to learn to do the magic. And then we called up Morty, who was the producer of
Leonard. I worked with Morty. He's great.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy. And we said, Morty, Dave told us to hit him as hard as we could. And he said, yep, I know Dave told you that. He told me that he told you that. And I said, well, we got a bit. And I said, we're gonna dump cockroaches on him. And Morty said, no, you will not. Dave does not like cockroaches. He's very fastidious. He will freak out. And you're not going to do this on the show. And I said, okay, we'll come up with something else. You know, at this that time, we were going to be doing Letterman like every month. So that's a lot of writing.
Yeah.
I said, we'll come up with something else. And I said, but tell Dave that you're not letting us do this. You know, I wasn't tattling on Morty, but let Letterman know that we tried and that you said no. So Morty called back like 15 minutes later and said, Dave says, do it. And I said, if you told him what it is, we can't do it. He said, I didn't tell him what it is. I told him that I felt it was too intense and wrong for his show and that he wouldn't like it and I wasn't going to let you do it. And he said, let them do it. And now think about that for a second. Your producer, who's a very close friend, who's been working with you for years, says, I'm not going to let the guys do this. And your decision is to say, let them do it? That's the kind of person you are? Well, that's the kind of person you are if you're David Letterman. And he would not watch rehearsal. It was going to be an entire surprise. And what he knew was when we put the hat down on his desk, that he was not to lift it. And the story I love that he told me after was his makeup woman, who was named Candy, watched the rehearsal. So she watched the rehearsal and knew, and Dave went in for his makeup with Candy, and he said, now, don't tell me what Penn and Teller are doing. Don't tell me. But you saw the rehearsal, right? And she said, yes, because at the rehearsal, Letterman's entire crew refused to work with us. We had to bring in our own people. We had our friends in there to clean up, right? And Candy said, yeah, I saw the rehearsal. And Dave said, so what's under the hat? Is it like a skunk or something? And Candy said, you better pray for a skunk, Dave. You better pray for a skunk. And
that almost makes it a bit better, too, because he knows something terrible is going to happen, which I think is even more fearful.
Right. And I told my mother what we were going to do. And my mother said to me, little old lady in Massachusetts with no experience in show business said to me, you'll never work in show business again. This is the end of your career. You cannot dump insects on a person on his own show. And I said, well, Mom, we're going to. So it came to the day and the time, and we went out and we did our bit. And Dave was so flipped out that there were actually tears in his eyes. And when we broke for commercial, I went over to shake his hand, and Dave said, get the fuck away from me. Just get the fuck away from me. And I went, oh geez, my mom is right. And the next day, and if anybody you know knows Letterman, they know how rare this is. The next day, Letterman called us, which he never does, and said, I was very unhappy last night at the end of that bit, and I watched it, and I want to tell you, I believe it's the best bit that's been on my show, and you're welcome back on anytime you want, do anything you want. Thank you, boys.
Amazing.
So I always say that the credit for that bit goes entirely to Dave, because that's not a bit we would have been allowed to do anywhere else. And in a certain sense, and I think you'll understand this, in a certain sense, it was Letterman's idea.
Yeah.
You know.
No, 100%. I remember there was a job that I took in TV just to work with Robert, because I heard about all the Letterman stories. And the one thing that he told me that still sticks with me, I still use, is he said, there's a difference between a soft joke and a hard joke. And you always have to go for the hard joke, the thing that is visceral, that just has that snap to it. And I said, how do you know the difference? And he goes, I have no idea. You just know it when you hear it. The Supreme Court. So was that always that thing where anytime I'm working on something, I know it's a soft joke and I know there's a hard joke somewhere, But it's always that, it's that struggle to find it. And jumping 1,000 cockroaches is definitely the hard joke.
Yeah, yeah. It was really remarkable and taught me a lot, because Dave, as you know from Morty, was difficult. He was tough to work with. And although he's, since his heart attack and since, you know, quitting the Late Show, he's changed tremendously. But he was very difficult. And you have to realize that it was that passion for the show, which I think was probably misguided. It probably wasn't worth it, but the show ended up being tremendous. And said that a cockroach popped up later.
Yeah, that was David Regal.
But they're not telling it enough. David is not telling it enough, because it was Julia Childs. Julia Childs was doing a cooking segment, and during her cooking segment, a cockroach came out. And what I loved, maybe one of the proudest moments of my life, is she looked out at the cockroach, and David went, "Penn and Teller," and Julia Childs went, "It was all that was said."
Yeah,
there was nothing else need to be said. It wasn't like, "Oh, Penn and Teller did this bit last night." Or right. Was it like Julia Childs went, "Oh, what did they do?" It was just Penn and Teller.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the things that I really enjoyed when you started talking about how the bit came to fruition, it started off with an idea where you're like, it would be really cool if we dumped these cockroaches on his desk. And then it was all about making that idea happen. I've been giving a lecture called "You Are All Terrible," where I go to magic conventions and magic clubs, and the first slide is just, "You are all terrible." And I explain one of the main reasons magic is bad is that, unlike other artists, they usually start with the technique or the trick, and then they figure out how to jam it into their act. And other artists start with the idea and then figure out, how do you put that in your art? And I was listening to a clip of you, I think it was on 60 Minutes, where you expressed a very similar idea. And I'd love for you to get more into the sort of P&T creative process, where it's idea first, technique later.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to say, first of all, that... this is our rule, and yet we don't follow it. There are many, many exceptions. And I want to make that clear so that we're not, I don't pass us off as some sort of purity. There are times when Teller comes to me and says, "I was reading a magic book, and there's this really beautiful thing that I have no idea what to do with, but it's a really, really nice method." And I'm now going through Juan Tamers' book on verbal magic, and I'm reading tricks in there, because we just did a TV special for the CW from our homes. We did a trick.
Okay, right? Try this at home?
Yeah. We did a trick for Elle and Dakota Fanning in their home with their deck of cards. And it's a very specific set of skills to get people to do magic in their own hands without touching it. Right. And so I'm going through that book, carefully doing every trick and trying to say, what wrinkle can we put on it? So I don't want to present us as pure. That having been said, the way we usually work is I'll go to Teller and say, which I've said, you know, for years and years, you know, there's something wonderful about big livestock in a show. And yet an elephant and a tiger are two on the nose. That's not our style. We need something really hard to handle and really humble. I want to do something with a cow. I think a cow on stage, everybody knows it's impossible, yet it's laughable and it's silly. And it is humble and low. And doing really difficult magic with something low is something we love to do. We want to do something with a cow. Now, I brought up doing something with a cow to Teller every 3 months for 20 years.
Actually, I going through all your interviews from the 80s forward, there's mentions of a cow that pop up every few years. And it's amazing, because often you have magicians who will mention a trick that they have, and it's something that never comes to fruition. But you can find mentions of tricks in your show now in the 80s and 90s, knowing that it's going to take 10, maybe 20 years before they actually come to fruition. But they all came true.
We are slow. We plug along. But I mean, that is a case of us knowing what we wanted to do at a conceptual level, at a level that was just, we want humility and we want jock magic to collide as fast as they can. You know, we want it to be stupid and laughable and humble and low. And we want it to say, this is the hardest fucking thing I've ever seen on stage. And I want those two things just go and bang against each other all the way through. No trick. Never mind. No method. No trick. No idea what we wanted to do, you know. And it wasn't until we got the idea of dressing the cow up as the elephant that everything came together, because we said, you know, the problem with that is it becomes a dumb brag, right? You can't say this cow is low and humble, because once you say low and humble, you no longer are low and humble.
Right.
You know, you can't say, I never read the newspaper. What?
Yeah. Look at this humble trick I'm doing in the theater named after me with big pictures of me.
Exactly. You can't do that. So you have to conceal the humility with presumption. So let's dress it up as an elephant and claim it's an elephant. Then the audience can say, look at these dipshits. But the characters on stage are not in on the joke. There's this story that is brilliant. When Matt and Trey, South Park.
Yeah.
When Matt and Trey were doing Team America. I don't know if you've seen Team America, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know that it's brutal to Hollywood. Brutal.
Oh, yeah. Sean Penn takes a lot of the brunt of that, I think. And like Matt Damon and Sean Penn take the brunt of that, I think.
And also Alec Baldwin.
Yes, yes.
And my story is dealing with Alec Baldwin. Yeah. I think the one who was most angry by it was Janine Garofalo, but that doesn't matter. So Alec Baldwin heard that they were doing Team America and knew that they were using Alec Baldwin in it. And Alec Baldwin got in touch with them. I know both Alec and I know Trey and Matt. I heard this story from Trey and Matt, but not from Alec. And I wanted to ask him about it because it's really interesting. And Alec called them up and said, I will voice the Alec Baldwin character in your movie, and I will not have any editorial control at all. Punch as hard as you want, be as mean as you want. I will take anything you dish out, but I'll do the voice. Now, first of all, this is a tremendous thing for Alec Baldwin to say. It's on the bravery category of Letterman, right? Because we know how brutal Trey and Matt can be. We know there's no meaner. And when they're also, unlike other mean people, when they're mean, they're right. And that's worse, right? Someone that's mean and wrong, you can take that. But mean and right, oh, it's horrible. And then Trey and Matt said that if they let Alec do it, it would allow Alec to be in on the joke.
Right, exactly. It's a really smart way of, all of a sudden, if you're the one voicing yourself, it's not, the criticism doesn't hit as hard.
Right, you can take it.
Yeah.
So although it would have been better for their movie and really amazing to work with them, they said no. And I love that story because it shows both sides of that, you know? And I don't want to present, I will present Alec as just brave. And I won't present it as manipulative in that it takes some of the sting out of it. But I want to present Trey and Matt as incredibly brave in saying that would be, you know, people would think it was so cool. Alec Baldwin's actually in their movie, but they didn't go with that either. And that's the kind of thing you have to allow the audience to say, it's a stupid cow, guys. You know, you can't say we've got a stupid cow. You can't allow that to happen. And a lot of the tricks that we start very, very high level. Like we've been known to start with stuff like we want people to be really aware of surveillance. Let's talk about surveillance. And that idea, just the title surveillance, we were kicking around for 30 years. And then we had this whole thing with reading a newspaper and cameras and other stuff and cameras in the audience and surprise camera and pops up there and all the ideas. None of them swung, you know, none of them were good. And then all of a sudden Teller said, you know, if we used a standard spirit billet reading routine, but done four-handed, which anytime you do anything four-handed fools even people that know the two-handed version, because no one thinks you can do a French drop handing it to someone else.
Right.
Exactly. Turns out you can. And turns out people hand stuff to each other more than they hand it to themselves. It looks more natural. So a four-handed billet reading, straight spiritualism, but the magic wand, the make-believe, is the CIA. And all of a sudden, you've got this, no one wants to see billet reading. No one cares about billet reading. But you change that from, you know, your Aunt Esther's middle name to your computer password. And you change the magic from something that, let's just round it off, nobody believes, you know, ESP and that kind of shit, and change that to something everybody knows, which is surveillance, and you've got a bit that's interesting. So we sometimes start very, very high level, but that collides with Teller knowing as much about the techniques of spirit mediums as I believe anybody alive. So you have to be careful when you say, don't put old wine in new bottles to sell it. You know, we don't want to take a standard sawing woman in half and paint the box as a train, put on a conductor's hat and go woo woo and call it a trick. But at the same time, when you get that high level idea, you got to have the chops underneath it. And
sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I repeat that in different ways because it's something that I don't want to believe. Yeah. I want to believe I could just be brilliant, and there you go.
Radio Rich here. We're going to take a break and rejoin this conversation in the midweek episode. But for right now, that was Penn Sunday School.
That was Penn Sunday School.
Do the mambo.
And to our listening
ears, become something.
You're about to hear some names of some awesome people who back us at patreon.com/pen. Talking about Jeff Bacher, Eric going lickety-splickety to his Toyota 09 Dobel, Michael Torbay, Leah B., Jacob McCulley, Kelsey Johnson, Nicole Martin, Crazy Cat Lady Scoop, Nick Hemsing, Music Man, Jamie Thrasher, Rachel Hawkins, Jake Schneider, Pete Hoke, Kelly McCauley, Jeremy Davidson, and Robin Garnett. Thanks so much.
We see you. You're a colleague. You're a partner. You're a friend. You're always here to support your family and your community. Now there's a school ready to support you. National University offers tuition discounts for military spouses and free tutoring, so you get the support you need to succeed. National University. Supporting the whole you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.